is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
It's Friday, August 23rd, 2019, and this is the Baseball Tonight podcast. I'm Buster Olney, and back in Bristol, Troy Farkas. Troy, we've been working through some technical issues today, but it sounds pretty good right now.
It does. Let's pray that it keeps going. Let's go.
Exactly. Red Sox Royals, they finished up a suspended game, and it only lasted 12 minutes.
Here's the pitch. Swing and a drive down the left field line toward the corner, and this ball hits on one hop off the wall. Here comes Owings with a winning run, and the Red Sox walk it off 5-4.
Joe Castiglione, WEI 93.7 FM. And yeah, Fenway Park had a bunch of kids there to watch this 12-minute resumption. Brock Holt talked about the unusual day with Nesson.
Of all baseball situations, Brock, how unique was this one today?
That was probably the funnest baseball game I've ever played. If every game could be like that, it'd be pretty cool, man. We had a good time. Good atmosphere. The crowd came out. That was fun. I mean, you hear them, they're crazy.
How do you get prepared to start a game in the 10th?
Same as always. I mean, I'm kind of tired right now, but we were just one. We knew one run would win it if we came out and got three outs, so... Vasquez with a big double, and then AC told me before I went up there, you're going to win this game, because he figured they'd walk Travis, and that's what happened. So about to go get on a plane and go to San Diego.
Pace of game worked out well there in Fenway Park. Rays beat the Orioles 5-2, and along the way, the Orioles had an ugly milestone.
The 1-2 pitch breaking ball is hit to right field and deep. Back that ball goes towards the scoreboard, and it's gone. It's over the scoreboard for a home run. And Austin Meadows has just put the Orioles into the record book. That is home run number 259 allowed by the Orioles, and that is a new single-season record for the most home runs allowed.
Tim Hunter, 105.7, the Fan. Brandon Hyde, Orioles manager, talked about the record number of home runs given up.
Again,
you're going to ask it?
I have to ask it. Just the last comment on this thing's over. You won't hear it again. Then. You broke the record.
Thomas?
You broke the record.
Yeah. Congratulations. I'm a broken record when it comes to our homers. The homers given up. I don't know what to say except for we have a lot of work to do with our pitchers. And going forward, obviously, to be able to compete in this division and in the big leagues, you're going to have to be able to keep the ball in the ballpark. And we've had a tough time doing that this year.
How about the Oakland Athletics? They complete a sweep of the Yankees, winning 5-3 on Thursday, jumping on Masahiro Tanaka in the first inning.
And now the pitch by Tanaka out of the stretch, and it's swung on line to left for a base hit. One run is in. Olsen's around third. They're going to wave him. Here's a throw to the plate, and it's not going to be in time. And two runs score on a base hit to left center by Mark Canha. And now it's a big bottom of the first for the A's.
The Yankees trying to hold off the Houston Astros for the best record in the American League, and Houston beat Detroit 6-3 with help, a lot of help from Gerrit Cole.
Swing and a miss, that's 10 for Gerrit Cole, and with that strikeout, he matches the franchise record of 14 games in one season of 10 strikeouts or more. That is a called third strike. Harold Castro goes down looking. Strikeout number 11 for Gerrit. Swing and a miss. Give Gerrit Cole an even dozen tonight.
That's right. A dozen strikeouts over seven innings. That sound from the Astros television network. About in the National League, the Braves faced the Marlins. It was 2-2 bottom of the ninth inning after Atlanta tied the game in the eighth. And this is what happened.
Lifted out towards left center field, towards the gap. It's a base hit, and Ronald Acuna is the savior tonight for the Braves. This crowd gets to their feet. They celebrate a sweep over the Marlins. The team mobs Ronald Acuna.
That was 680. The Fan. The Mets also were going for a sweep against the Indians, and Noah Syndergaard was outstanding.
First pitch to Greg Allen. Lifts it deep in the air to left. Back forward is Davis. Long run toward the warning track. Around near the wall. And he makes it over the shoulder. One-handed catch on the warning track. Where did that come from? Greg Allen hit one deep in the air to left. Not a guy with much power. And J.D. Davis just turned into Willie Mays.
Struck him out. Five perfect innings for Noah Syndergaard.
And the final score was 2-0. That sound from the Mets radio and television networks. The Mets just continue to roll. This game was shortened, by the way, by rain to 8 innings. The Nationals finished off the Pirates 7-1, and this was the return of Max Scherzer to the rotation, throwing 4 innings, including this moment.
Swing and a miss. A breaking ball to Diaz on the 1-2 pitch for the final out of the inning. First time since the first, Max Scherzer gets a 3-up and 3-down inning through 4 here in Pittsburgh. It's the Nationals 2 and the Pittsburgh Pirates 1.
That from the Nationals Radio Network, Scherzer talked about his return.
Velocity's never been a problem with this. I've been able to throw hard throughout this whole time, so really wouldn't judge on that. Just wanted to come out here, never really emptied the tank tonight and just try to pitch. I can't get hurt again. That's just the reality of this. And so got out here and was able to go 4 innings and get a good feel for this. So getting back in there and, getting back into game action, because now that's real. I mean, you can simulate games all you want, but that's not simulated games aren't real. So the fact that, prepare for a lineup and have those guys facing a team that can, those guys can hit, that was fun tonight.
The Cubs beat the Giants 1-0. Anthony Rizzo providing the only run in this game in the bottom of the fourth.
Rizzo chokes up now for the 1-2 pitch. Anthony lines one towards center base hit. Coming in to score, Jason Hayward. Cubs lead 1-0. Rizzo a line drive over the head of the shortstop Crawford. Nice piece of two-strike hitting, and the Cubs lead 1-0.
Pat Hughes on the Cubs Radio Network. The Cubs win. How about the Cardinals? They played the Rockies in St. Louis on Thursday, and they trailed Colorado 5-4, bottom of the seventh inning, until this happened.
The 2-0 pitch for Dexter Fowler. A swing, and there's a drive hit deep. Right center field. This one is going to go. A home run that lands in the Cardinal bullpen. The Cardinals take the lead 6-5 over the Rockies.
John Rooney on the Cardinals Radio Network. So just about every team in the National League that's competing for a wild card spot or a playoff spot is came through with victories on Thursday.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
Game of the day in Los Angeles. The Dodgers and the Blue Jays, and you know all about the Dodgers this year. They seem to find late inning magic every single night. And they needed it yesterday after Vladimir Guerrero Jr. extended the Blue Jays' lead in the top of the sixth.
Here's Vladdy. Swings to the first pitch and jolts it. Deep into the SoCal night. That ball is gone! Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with an absolute rocket over the wall to the left of the batter's eye at Dodger Stadium. 15th home run of the season for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. But the Dodgers, as they tend to do this year, they rally in the bottom of the ninth.
That is down the line, and the game is tied. Seager's headed for second. It's 2-2, and the winning run is in scoring position. How can you have any...
Joe Davis on the Dodgers television network with that call. It was 2-2. Enrique Hernandez came to the plate.
1-1 one strike. Lined into center field for a base hit. Rounding third, on his way home is Seager. Throw to the plate, the Dodgers win again. Kike Hernandez with the walk-off hit. The Dodgers with 3 in the bottom of the ninth. Beat the Blue Jays 3-2. The magic number is down to 14. And this incredible journey goes on unabated.
Kike Hernandez on Kike Hernandez bobblehead night. That was Charlie Steiner, AM 570 LA Sports. Dodgers did it again, and Dave Roberts, their manager, talked about this tendency to win games in dramatic fashion.
It's where you just, like we talked about, it seems like, I guess we've talked about 12 times, where you expect it, and you don't know who it's going to be, and I think that even after that walk, they felt it. And so you start having that, and it manifests itself, and guys want to be in that spot. But again, to be in that spot, to have a chance to be the hero, but to take a base hit, take a walk, to then give another guy an opportunity. That's what we do very well.
All right, coming up, a great conversation with George Springer about being a good teammate and a moment when his perspective on failure really turned around. Rena Bonina will be here with your Bleacher Tweets, and we're going to talk about where we think Gerrit Cole is going to land in free agency next winter. Let's get to it.
All aboard.
It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravage.
And a Ravi train has been parked in Williamsport over the last week and a half at the Little League World Series. Ravi, how you doing?
I am doing great, Buster. Having a great event. Weather cooperates this weekend. Got four great teams from the Little League World Series still in it. You got Hawaii. Shane Victorino's going to bop into town. Of course, his dad is the mayor of Maui.
Yep.
You know, a small island of 15,000. And here are these 13 kids competing for a World Series title. We got Jurgrit Profar. Well, of course, it's Jurickson Profar's brother and Jeremy Profar's brother from, you know, another island of 160,000 that have produced, obviously, multiple major league players, some of them superstars. We have a team from Louisiana where they really root for LSU baseball more than any other baseball group. We got a kid that's hitting like, as David Ross said last night, David Ortiz in the playoffs when he was with him, when he was hitting a gazillion. A little lefty named Reese Roussel. You just watch him. Last night he had three doubles and a grand slam, and every ball at Little League must have had an exit velocity between 80 and 90 miles an hour. There were no little bloopers, and Ross compared him to Ortiz, which was really kind of cool. And then, of course, you have Japan, which you always have, and that's what we got again. And they're sort of living high off the Yu Darvish meeting during the World Series Classic. So four really unique places that these teams came from, small places, enormous places. And it's been a another reminder that baseball is a universally spoken language for kids that are 10, 11, and 12. And I'm really impressed and amazed by their IQ and the fact that you could be from Japan and you could be from Maui and you could go and grab a bunch of your friends and play the same game and be competitive. I think it's so great.
Yeah, curious how, if I remember the notes they sent out, this jumped out of me. It's a fraction of the state of Rhode Island. That's how small Curacao is in terms of its actual size. And I'll never forget, I actually, Carl, I visited Shane Victorino at his parents' home in Wailea, Maui.
Yep.
And
yep.
This is how small it is. You can stand on the back porch of his parents' home, and you know how you have that sort of that middle part, the waistline, so to speak, of Maui? You can see both the East Coast and the West Coast from his parents' back porch. That's how small Maui is.
It is, you know, it is tiny. And it has way more pineapple than it does people, having covered the golf tournament over there in January for so many years. But a wonderful group of people with all sorts of stories around these teams and some of the things they deal with as families throughout the course of their lives and in the summer that make them even more united than they were when they came together to begin this thing. So it's a really cool event. It's wonderful. I'm glad we're a part of it.
All right. Give me a favorite moment that you've had so far from the World Series.
Wow. There's a lot of them. I think what I would say, you know, if I were to highlight it going into this championship weekend, it's been the baseball IQ of these kids. You know, whether it's a diving stop by a shortstop to prevent two runs from coming in, or it's a 1-5-6 double play. Like, how often do you see that where a ground ball goes back to the pitcher and rather than throwing to second to first, he decided to go to third and then to second? The shortstops are all about 5'1". I mean, all of them with the exception of the kid who plays for Curacao. They all have such incredible fundamentals. Their ability to go to their backhand, their ability to scoop it with one hand and throw off their right foot while running. It is amazing. And I really have to feel like I'm guarding against making them out to be something they're not. And when you see people like David Ross or Kyle Peterson or others that come here to watch get excited about it, you realize, like, you're not exaggerating. I mean, these ultimately, and maybe none, but maybe one, maybe more than one, end up at the major leagues. The passion for these kids and their abilities to play at this age, you're not overselling it. You don't have to really guard against, really, Carl? Like, they're not that good. You know, there's other types of ball that these kids are playing. The better ones go and play travel ball, et cetera, et cetera. And the truth is, when they get to that age 12 year, many of the better ones say, I'm not going to play travel ball. I'm going to go to Little League this year because I have a chance to go to Williamsport and play in the Little League World Series and be on TV. So the truth is, you are getting many of the better 12-year-olds just because they come together in their communities and say, let's go for it. And that's exactly what happened to this team that's in New Orleans. They come out of there. The Little League has been established 6 years ago for the very reason that other towns Lake Charles and Lafayette have been to the World Series. And the parents and some of them are like, well, wait a minute, how do we do that? So they chartered a little league, and 6 years later, here they are playing in the World Series. So you do get many of the best 12-year-olds in the country, and certainly you do from around the world.
All right, I want to ask you about Gerrit Cole, who had another phenomenal outing yesterday. And first we start with this. I can't remember an example of two starting pitchers, dominant starting pitchers on the same team, whose numbers are this identical. Carl, listen to these numbers for Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander. As of this morning, after Cole's incredible performance last night, he has an ERA of 2.75. Justin Verlander, 2.77. Gerrit Cole has 238 strikeouts. Verlander has 239. Their one-loss record for both, 15-5. So they're both having incredible seasons. We're going to be talking about them for the American League Cy Young Award, but they're, of course, in different places in their career. Verlander just signed an extension with the Astros. It looks like he's going to finish his career there. And Gerrit Cole, Carl, a free agent in the fall. Oh, my God, he's going to kill it. You know, we've seen some free agents in recent years where the numbers have come down. David Price is the biggest contract ever in terms of total dollars signed, $217 million with the Red Sox. I think Gerrit Cole is going to obliterate that number. I don't know what it's going to be, 220, 225, 240, but he's going north of that because he's only 29 years old and he is absolutely at the peak of his career. What do you think?
Well, we saw Gerrit Cole's future earnings the other day in Williamsport when we were walking through the facility, actually. It was big, blue, had four wheels on it, and on the outside of the vehicle it said B-R-I-N-K-S. It was a Brinks truck. And we said, look, there is Gerrit Cole's future right there. It is loaded with $100 bills, and there's probably 100 million of them in there. We were making the point that that guy is going to get paid. But I think what you have to do, if you look at all these teams now that are in these races, well, you know, to me, the single biggest thread that connects the Astros, not losing right now, the Nationals winning a lot more, the New York Mets winning a lot more than they have, all of them are relying on starting pitching that is getting them to these points. And teams currently, like the Yankees, struggling a little bit. Starting pitching is at the root of all of that as they go and get swept in Oakland. The Mets beat Cleveland, who has decent starting pitching, but they were outpitched by better pitchers on the Mets for this particular series. That starting pitching, when you get into the last 8 weeks of the season, now we've got 5 weeks left, everybody starts to rely on their starting pitching. And then you know, as you turn the page on the calendar into the playoffs, my gosh, how many starters can we rely on? Who's going to dominate? Houston, dominant. L.A., dominant. The Nationals, however far they go, dominant. The Mets, currently. Syndergaard, five perfect innings after DeGrom does what he does, dominant. That's why Gerrit Cole gets the money. That's why the Red Sox do what they did with Price. And even if it is considered in the short term a mistake for Chris Sale, that's what you have to do because you need two or three of those on your pitching staff if you want to be a real contender and considered a championship-caliber team in October. He's going to get paid because you need players like that.
Okay, I want to have some fun and speculate on where he might land. For me, I've got three teams that would be early front runners on who could sign Gerrit Cole. And let's face it, he probably isn't going to sign because he's Scott Boras' client till sometime at the end of February or March. But right, he's going to get paid by somebody. Three teams. One, the Philadelphia Phillies. Jake Arrieta has 1 year left on his contract. We've seen Scott Boras develop a relationship with John Middleton, who runs the Philadelphia Phillies. So you'd have to install them in that conversation. For me, the Yankees, after what they've experienced this year and a question moving forward, who's going to be the ace? It may be difficult for them to do it because they've got some other contracts and they've got to pay other players moving forward. Aaron Judge soon is going to be making a whole lot of money. But maybe Gerrit Cole finally lands with the Yankees. He's been Brian Cashman's great white whale. The Yankees drafted him. He didn't sign. They tried to trade for him a couple winters ago. Couldn't finish that deal with the Pirates. Maybe finally the Yankees get the great white whale. But I'm installing, and I talked about it yesterday, early favorites for me are the Angels. That, you know, he's from California. I don't know exactly what he wants. I don't think he would probably be averse to the idea of going back to his home state. And that is a team that now that they have the Mike Trout situation settled, they need to take a step forward, and Gerrit Cole would be a great building block. What do you think of those three teams?
I like them all. I think the Yankees idea is intriguing, and I think it's intriguing to me for a number of reasons. I think when you look at the Yankees this year, and the guys that would be considered the most valuable players, Aaron Judge is like number six, maybe number seven, yep, maybe not on the list. And if we are going to allocate resources, and you're asking me on that team with the offensive players they have, including people like DJ LeMahieu, who we weren't considering a great offensive player. We knew he could hit, but he certainly wasn't going to be the MVP of the league, not named Mike Trout. That would make more sense to me that the Yankees would hopefully say to themselves, we need an ace. We have to have that guy because every other team does that we're talking about and competing with. So that intrigues me from the perspective of, well, we have to make a choice at some point, and we should at some point say to ourselves, we need that guy. The same way we thought we might trade for Syndergaard or anyone else that would be an ace, we need him. So that makes great sense. You know, I think another team, and I'm not sure they're yet ready to do that, but at least two of them, in my opinion. The Giants are obviously in a transition mode. He's only 29. They have a ton of money. There's a lot of money that is old and coming off the books in the next year and two. San Francisco, and I think the White Sox are in a position in the next year, if not two, with all of their young players and some of their young pitchers still in the AA to AAA system. He's a guy, Reinsdorf, I know they don't like to spend a ton of money. I understand that. But I also understand that you do need an ace. And he seems, Cole, to be formidable in his health and in his ferocity when he's on the mound, that if we are ready to go for it and we're trying to compete with the Chicago Cubs, maybe the Chicago White Sox make an offer that at least has Scott Boras turn and say, whoa, because he's great at generating that with teams you don't think. So just as sort of wild cards, I would agree with your list 100% and put the White Sox and the Giants on there.
And keep in mind, with the Yankees, Masahiro Tanaka, 1 year left on his contract. CC Sabathia, yeah, he comes off the books. He's retiring. Jay Happ, 1 year guaranteed on his deal. So they are, and Jacoby Ellsbury soon, actually. His deal will finally come off the books within a couple of years.
Ooh.
So they
Ooh.
Do, right, exactly. So they actually do have some payroll flexibility coming up, and I do think that it might be a similar situation to what we saw with CC Sabathia when he initially signed, where the Yankees had to pay a premium to get him out of California. They had to blow away the competition. The Angels offered about $100 million. The Yankees offered $161 million, made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Might be that same situation with Gerrit Cole. And you're right about the White Sox. Jerry Reinsdorf has a desire to win. The one thing he can't do is what he did with Manny Machado, and that is to slow play it. Like, he needs to come in with the big number right off the top and sort of elbow teams out of the way. And Gerrit Cole's earned that type of leverage this winter.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And your point's well taken. The problem with the idea to come in with a big number and blow them away is, for the most part, and I think Cole's unique in this, in the market that has shrunk when it comes to these huge contracts. Boras was able to get it for Harper. He's a slow play guy. You know, that's the issue.
And yeah,
he will cause the slow play.
All right, two more quick ones for you. We got a few minutes left. I want you to tell me what the most significant thing that happened last night was in the sport. I'll give you three options. Oakland sweeps the Yankees. Their starting pitching is excellent in this series. The Mets continue to roll. They sweep the Cleveland Indians. Noah Syndergaard was perfect through five innings. The rains rolled in, but they hang on and win that game. And Max Scherzer is back. He rejoins the Washington rotation. Four innings, one run allowed, three strikeouts. Of those three things, what's the most significant?
All right, I'm going to hate you, but you're going to hate me. I'm going to go with D, which combines both Scherzer and Syndergaard.
It's
that we're at that time of year where the National League and all these teams that are currently in that conversation, all the wild card teams in the National League won last night. Everybody ratchets it up a little bit. Syndergaard performs the way he did. Scherzer knows how important it is to be back on the mound. So I'm going to just introduce, it's the time of year where the good teams do separate. I mean, we get into this every year. It's kind of bunched, and then you have these teams pull away from everybody else, and you see the teams that are consistently losing. I know that while we were, well, we're here in Williamsport, and we were promoting the A's-Yankees on Tuesday about the upcoming games, I said on the air, watch how tough the A's play the Yankees. Yep. Oakland, to me, is like the most difficult place for an East Coast team to go in and expect to win a series, especially when the A's are in the race. It is brutal. I don't think they were looking ahead to the Dodgers in the series we have coming up Sunday night. I just think Oakland is a nasty team to play. I think they grit. I think they grind. All of a sudden, their bullpen is better than it's been. Trevino is back doing what we know he's capable of doing. A.J. Puck shows up. Chris Davis finally hits a home run after an absence. They are really competitive. It's not a fun trip to go on. It's not a fun place to play, which is exactly how the A's want it to be. And, you know, Bob Melvin, year in and year out with sort of the land of misfit toys that know exactly how the heck to play baseball, pose a huge threat. So I'm introducing a D to the column and not surprised that the A's did what they did. I'm just not.
Yeah, and if Oakland winds up, let's say they make the wild card, let's say they face Cleveland, if they get through that and the Yankees finish with the best record in the American League, they would play the Yankees in the first round. And that would be an intriguing series coming off that sweep this week. And last, I want to ask you about Jeff Passan's story last night. Major League Baseball has banned players from participating in the Venezuela Winter League in keeping with a recent White House embargo on business with Venezuela because of possible ties between that Winter League and the Venezuela government. It's a complicated story, Carl. I'd encourage everybody to read it. It's on ESPN.com. Jeff did a great job with it. But big picture, the larger concern is for players from Venezuela, for me. Those already here and those who might want to come from Venezuela to play. We don't know how this decision is going to affect the 16-year-old who wants to play Major League Baseball. Just to, as Jeff made the comparison in the piece, it might turn out Venezuela is the new Cuba in having the difficulty of getting players and players having the opportunity to leave that place. And, you know, I've had recent conversations, Sandy Leon, Joe Musgrove of the Pirates told me about it, Elias Diaz and, you know, the tremendous concern that he has for people in his homeland and him talking to Little Leaguers the other day, making sure they're okay. That's who I was thinking of when I read this story, was all those players, future players, affected by this situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – look, nobody wants to dive too deep into politics and sports, but nope. I will say that historically – when a government makes a statement that suggests we are not doing business with you, and it's not exclusive to baseball, but the other government is inclined to then suggest, well, we're not going to do business with you. Like, what hammer do we have other than to respond to what you are doing? And we have seen it in Cuba. And for a while recently, and Little League is a great example, Cuba, the Little Leaguers participated in the same region that Curaçao did for the first time. And there are constant efforts on the Little League level to involve Cuba, which obviously, you know, we've seen players escape the island in order to become major leaguers. We, this year, had Little Leaguers freely go to Cuba, go to Curaçao to play. So I agree. I think it's an important read, and I'm certain that the only hammer that the country has in which one country says we're not doing business with you is to say, well, the commodity or one of them that we offer other countries is baseball players. So we're going to withhold baseball players because you're withholding X from us. That's how it works. That's not even a political statement. It's fact. So, yes, I think Jeff's drawing of the lines and the dots being connected is a potential accuracy and more likely than not to occur.
All right, Carl, thanks for doing this. What time are your broadcasts on Saturday?
Saturday, baby, 12:30 and 3:30, International Championship. Look forward to that. Always a good one. You have Profar's brother, Hawaii and Curaçao, 3:30 Eastern time. I should say Japan and Curaçao, 3:30 Eastern time. We have Hawaii and this great team from Louisiana. So we appreciate watching. Have a great trip to L.A. Look forward to the Sunday night game and this big series between the Yankees and the Dodgers.
Thanks, Carl.
See you, bud.
Before I speak with the Astros' George Springer, we all know hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. Hiring used to be hard, but today hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. That's ZipRecruiter.com/B-U-S-T-E-R. ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. George Springer is a 3-time All-Star of the Houston Astros. Outfielder's hitting .295 with 27 homers this year. George, how you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for joining us. I was thinking about you in this regard. You know, CC Sabathia is retiring this year, and he's someone who, as you know, has a great reputation of being a tremendous clubhouse guy in the way that he's very inclusive and he pulls people in. You know, the other day I was talking to some of the Atlanta Braves, and he was telling me that part of the reason why the Braves picked up Billy Hamilton is because they really feel like he's a great clubhouse guy. You've got that type of reputation, someone who is really good with other players and draws people in. Where do you think that comes from you, for you?
I don't know. You know, I just like to have fun. I try to take each day for what it is and kind of just, you know, go out there and kind of enjoy the day because I get to play a sport as a job and you know, there's so much more to life than a game of baseball. So you know, I just like to kind of enjoy the day, embrace it because I'm not going to play this game forever. So I might as well, you know, to try to go out, smile, and have some fun.
I'll never forget talking with you before Game 7 of the 2017 World Series, and that's exactly how you were. You were so loose, and I was like, how you doing? And you were like, hey, all I know is that what a great experience this has been no matter what happens today. You remember how you felt before that game?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of one of those things where, you know, I think the word or the phrase Game 7 means so much more to the people outside of the guys actually playing in the game. You know, there's a lot of build up to, you know, this is what could happen. This is what might not happen. But I just remember for us that day as a team, it just honestly felt like a normal day. You know, it just felt like, oh, we were going out and playing, the Los Angeles Dodgers on a random Monday in May. You know, it's something where you don't really put anything into perspective besides, you know, let's just play this 9 innings. Let's win this game and go home. But I think for us, you know, kind of understanding that the World Series is something that you have to cherish because it's so hard to get there. A lot of things have to go right all year. And, you know, I may never get back there. I may. So I just knew that at that point in time, I might as well embrace it, you know, have fun. I've played in plenty of Game 7s in my backyard as a kid, so I might as well just go out and kind of, you know, play the game how I know how and, you know, whatever happens, happens.
George, did you have some trial and error to get to that point of perspective, or did you just feel that way just walking in that day, do you think?
Yeah, you know, I think Game 1 for me, obviously, you know, nobody wants to punch out 4 times in any game. But to kind of go through that on the biggest stage of our game, you know, the first game, that be, it was a little tough, but I remember having conversations that night with AJ Hinch and Carlos Beltran about how, you know, this is the best time of our baseball lives and we don't know if we're ever going to get back here. So I might as well go out, enjoy the day, enjoy the game for what it is, because, you know, Altrad had been playing this game, you know, his whole career for 20-something years, and for him to say that meant a lot to me. So it's kind of one of those ones where I got to the field the next day, and I was just like, you know what, it is what it is. I'm going to enjoy this because this is what it's all about. And, you know, I started having some success and then ended up just kind of taking each day for that.
All right. Just getting back to you in the clubhouse. Tell me that imagine if a rookie walks through a door on a given day. It's his first time in the Astros clubhouse. How do you try to sort of, you know, get to know that player, you know, help that player along? What are the things that you like to do?
I like to try to distract them. From the first day of kind of I'm playing in the big leagues, and you know that there's a lot of least from my own experience, you always think that you're walking into this crazy, you know, atmosphere of, you know, the guys are plugged in the walls and you're studying this all day long, and you know it's baseball 24/7, when the reality of it is you've been doing this your whole life. You've been in clubhouses before, and you just got to try to have fun. So I like to try to joke around with people. You know, a guy just walked in here today for the first time, and you know, guys are sitting here playing cards or you know, playing PlayStation, who's listening to music, just talking about everything but the game. And I think, you know, kind of being able to, you know, distract somebody from their first day, I think is one. But you know, I think it's such a special day. Right? Your first day in the big leagues is always fun. So you know, I just like to try to, you know, give them a bit of advice about just kind of embrace it, go out and you know have some fun, and you know, hopefully sneak a knock in there.
When we were around you guys early this year, AJ Hinch was telling us that you really enjoyed having Michael Brantley as a teammate, and you seem to have drawn a lot from him. Tell me about Michael Brantley.
Ooh, Michael Brantley. He is a man of one emotion, very, very stoic all day, but he goes about his business in a way that I've never really seen before. He likes to have fun, kind of enjoys the game, enjoys the day, but, you know, to be able to have somebody like him, who's arguably the most consistent player in the game, kind of watch him prepare, watch how he goes through things. So he never takes the days off. You know, he always shags in practice, always hits on the field, you know, always does things the same way. And, you know, not to say that I didn't really have that before, but, you know, to have a guy like that as a player in your clubhouse, you know, I pay attention when he talks, but, you know, he's just the utmost professional player I've been around, but he's even better of a person.
Yeah, this spring I was talking to one member of the Indians coaching staff, and he was telling me, boy, that's the big question. Who's going to step into those shoes? Because he was viewed as such a great leader over there. About that 2017 World Series championship, players I've talked to through the years, some of them like to wear the World Series ring. Some of them basically put it away. What about you?
Mine is away. It's away. I look at it though because it reminds me of you know the great times in this game, but it also reminds me of what our team was able to do amidst a pretty you know hard time in Houston. You know, obviously with Hurricane Harvey that year, it was tough for the whole city. You know, a lot of people lost everything that they've ever worked for, everything that they've ever owned, and you know that gold banner that we have on our light tower means so much to this city, this organization. So it's away. It's hidden in my house somewhere, but it's always in my sight.
All right, last one for you. The Red Sox this year have had some ups and downs during the course of the year. And a conversation among baseball executives now is the whole issue of a World Series hangover. It's been almost 20 years since a team won back-to-back World Series. What's your perspective on that, having lived through the season after you win a World Series?
Yeah, you know, I actually think Bill Harris has said it the best of there is no such thing as, you know, a hangover because you won. It's simply because you've played longer than anybody else. And, you know, you lose a month of kind of letting your body rest, of letting your mind rest. And the next thing you know, the World Series for us ended in November that year. And, you know, 3 weeks later, you're getting back in the gym, you're picking up a bat again, you know, you're kind of starting to slowly throw a ball. So I just think that a big thing is fatigue. You're mentally gassed. And I remember by May last year, it's just like, oh my God, it's, you know, it's only May, which seems crazy, but that's only, you know, 40 games into a 162 game schedule. It's just, it seems as if the season's never going to end. And, you know, the constant grind of you know, playing it every day and, you know, trying to get through just the normal ups and downs of a long year, you know, people don't appreciate that until you don't have a normal off season. And you know, I wouldn't trade that for the world. I would love to have a short off season every year. But knowing that, just that's why it's so hard for teams to do it over and over and over again. It's just because I just think that fatigue, you know, physically, mentally plays a lot more into it than you ever understand. And you know, I went through it last year. A lot of guys went through it, and whether you realize it or not, you know, you're just probably tired, and it is what it is. You know, it's a very, very worth it to have that gold banner, that ring, you know, all that comes with it. But sometimes at the end of the day, this game is just tiring and you can't do anything about it.
All right, George. Well, thanks very much. I'll be seeing you in October.
All right. Appreciate it.
Bleacher tweets.
Rena Wong is known on Twitter as Rena Benina, and on Friday she picks and leads the Bleacher tweets. Rena, how you doing today?
I'm good. I'm taking a page out of your book. I'm on vacation this week, actually on the East Coast, so doing well.
Nice. You going to see any ball games while you're in the East?
I am unfortunately not. My family isn't too keen on going to ballparks with me, and there are some young children, so a couple strikes on my side.
Yeah, I can relate. I was just with my family for 10 days. Everyone else in my family hates baseball. I'm talking about my siblings, and during the time I was on vacation, I didn't have one conversation about baseball because they would be like speaking a foreign language to all of them, and we didn't watch one baseball game, so I can completely relate to you. You're probably slipping away as I did, checking your phone at the end of the day, checking the internet to see what's going on with the sport you love.
Absolutely. I've been sitting in the corner of the living room pretty often, checking scores, like watching highlights, and my family's kind of been looking at me like, what is she doing? You know, why isn't she interacting with us? So yeah, definitely.
I'm the black sheep of my family, and apparently you are with yours. Okay. All right, let's get to this week's Bleacher Tweets.
Sounds good. Let's kick things off with P.K. Steinberg at P.K. Steinberg. The Phillies and Red Sox have nearly identical records. Which team is underperforming the most?
Slam dunk, Red Sox. Look, it's funny because when you look at the team, you know, Rafael Devers having a tremendous breakout season, becoming one of the best hitters in baseball. Xander Bogaerts has had a great season at shortstop. You got J.D. Martinez, who's got good numbers, and Mookie Betts. And I get it that the starting pitching lately has been beaten up, but long before any of that happened, they weren't playing very well. And you kind of look at the players and you look at the record, and it doesn't make a lot of sense. What George Springer just told us about the hangover effect, I think that absolutely applies to the Red Sox.
Moving on, we've got Rick Gabler, at Rick_Gabler. Hey, Buster. I know Verlander is likely at the top of voters' Cy Young ballots with Morton and Cole close behind, but Lucas Giolito is now 14-6 for a team 12 games under. Do any of the poor team candidates such as Giolito, Minor, or Lynn have a shot?
I think, and Rena, I'm curious to see if you agree with me, that Lucas Giolito is going to be like the DJ LeMahieu of for the MVP race, where we can talk about, you know, a Nelson Cruz, a DJ LeMahieu maybe being talked about down ballot on the MVP race, but they're not going to win. You know, Mike Trout's going to be the MVP in the American League, and you know that in the American League Cy Young Award, it's probably going to come down to Verlander versus Cole, maybe Charlie Morton kind of getting in the way. What do you think?
Yeah, I watched that game the other day where Giolito just absolutely beat up on the Twins, essentially using three different pitches. And I agree, he seems to be like the DJ LeMahieu, where he's essentially carrying the White Sox, and every time he has a start, you know that team is going to get a win regardless of how the offense performs. So I agree, but I do think that the race is going to come down to Verlander v. Cole. Lucas Giolito might have a little bit of a better chance in the four coming years when the Red Sox, or rather the White Sox, are to take over the AL Central. Moving forward, we've got Rusty Shackelford at Shackle_Ford03. After yesterday's Sox-Royals continuation game, would MLB have allowed the Royals to forfeit the game? They're already entirely out of the playoffs, and the Sox with a long shot. I imagine the players would have preferred the off day.
There actually, Rena, there's actually a precedent for this. If you remember the Pine Tar game when the Yankees and the Royals and George Brett going nuts, when that decision went against the Yankees, George Steinbrenner actually threatened to have the Yankees boycott the resumption of the game, and he was warned that he would be facing major discipline if they didn't participate. So they finished that game. They did some things to try to make a mockery of it, but they got it across the finish line. I suspect that if the Royals had threatened not to show up to Fenway Park to finish this game, they probably would have gotten a similar message from Major League Baseball.
Next, we've got Sterling at StirRide73. As a follow-up question from a previous tweet that he had submitted, he wants to know, who ends up with the best Hall of Fame creds at the end of their respective careers? Alonso, Guerrero Jr., Bichette, or Tatis Jr.?
Yeah, and that was the original question, came in on Thursday, and Troy and I were debating, you know, which one, what was the context for that? Was that about 2019, or was it about their whole careers? I would rank him, and Rena, I'm curious to see how you would. I'd go Tatis Jr., Bichette, Vlad Jr., and Pete Alonso in that order. How would you rank them?
I would switch the first two. As of right now, I would put Bo Bichette first,
wow,
and then Tatis Jr. second, just because I'm always a little bit wary of injury. And, you know, Bo Bichette has really carried the Jays since he's come up. I don't think they've lost the series. Oh, well, they lost the series to the Dodgers. But before last night, they hadn't lost the series since he came up. And I've just never seen a player really turn the Jays upside down like that since they started rebuilding a couple years ago.
Yeah, he's tremendous.
So fun to watch. Last but not least, we've got Reggie Deal at BaseballNerd07. Buster, you're hired after the World Series to be a GM, but it's not ideal. You can work with a rebuilding team such as Miami, Baltimore, Kansas City, or Seattle, or you can choose a team that's in danger of falling off a cliff, the New York Mets, Boston, or San Francisco. Who do you choose?
Yeah, Reggie, when I first read your question through and you said you're hired after World Series to be a GM, but it's not ideal, I would agree with that. Hiring me as a GM would not be ideal. I think of those teams you mentioned. I look at Seattle. I've always looked at Seattle. I know a lot of general managers as this great untapped resource, like this place where they actually are willing, the ownership is willing to spend some money. It's a beautiful city, a great place to work. You know, it hasn't worked out. I do feel like for the Red Sox, there's now going to be a period of rebuilding coming up, and if Farhan Zaidi has taken over the Giants, that's a franchise with a lot of potential. It might take 3 or 4 years, but I think among those, I'd have the most fun in Seattle. What about you?
Yeah, you stole my answer. I would also pick Seattle, but I have another case for Seattle, and that they've never won a World Series.
Yeah.
So if I do a horrible job as a completely, completely inexperienced GM, that onus wouldn't fall on me that they haven't won a World Series since I took over ownership. And there just hasn't been as much fanfare about their management or ownership decisions. So I feel like I can kind of just slip in and do things under the radar. And they do a really, really terrible job. They're on the West Coast, you know, really close to the ocean. I just can just kind of disappear from there.
Yeah. And you would want to be the Theo Epstein of Seattle, going in there and winning a title.
that I would like that, but you know, sometimes things just don't work out. I mean, when you rebuild, it doesn't necessarily go as planned. So I'm preparing always for worst case scenario. A little bit of a pessimist myself.
There you go. All right, Rena, thank you. Thanks for working through
thank
our
you.
Technical issues this morning.
No problem. Happy to be here.
All right, that's it for today. My thanks to George Springer, to Rena, to Carl, to Troy Farkas. Have a great day, everybody. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.